Great Lakes region. You know, this was, you know, according to, you know, Dr. Ben and whatnot, this was the land of the mountains of the moon, the land of where the god Hapi dwelled. So, you know, this region, you know, was very sacred to the Egyptians. And we consider the fact that it was the Great Lakes region is literally where the Nile River is formed at. You know, it's the basis of the lifeline of the civilization. So, you know, logically, it would be something sacred to those people, considering the fact that they really sanctified the river itself as a life source for them. So, you know, that would make sense to me in that regard.
Right, absolutely. And when I was, when I think about punting, right, in that regard. Oh, and also let me point out the fact that, we will be having people come in to discuss after we wrap, just not right now for this particular portion of the discussion. But yeah, so in the travels into punt, they were reaching the most, I think it was through the Red Sea, of course. And the Egyptians are the ones who named it punt. So we don't really know what the puntites might have called themselves. It might have been something similar to what the Egyptians were calling them. But we'll never really know until we find a relief that could really speak on that. But it was a very much an important trading post for things like some things that Bodhi had touched on, but also, you know, gold, frankincense, jewelry, perfumes, oils. Myrrh was a big staple, and I love burning myrrh myself as well. But and what do you think about when they say that it's well, in regard to the, you know, it's often depicted as the land of their gods or other ancestors?
Yeah, that's something that, you know, I feel like with regard to the Khoisan people that I mentioned in the last space, or earlier, this, you know, this linkage between the Khoisan people and the fact that the Khoisan people genetically are proven time and time again to be a, the most ancient people, along with the Pygmies. They share the deepest ancestral clades of any population on Earth, and many people, you know, point out, you know, particularly of African abstract, that, you know, orally, these people are named as the oldest people in, you know, not just Africa, but the world. So, you know, that's something to really take note of. You know, we talk about, you know, punt being, you know, this ancestral land, you know, the oldest people, some of the oldest people on Earth, you know, congregated there before, you know, the contemporary demographic layout of Africa. So,
and then I wanted to also point out what the punt reliefs spoke about when it came to anything in relation to punt. Hatshepsut, who makes my beautiful monuments, who purifies the seat of the great Ennead of gods for my dwelling as a memorial of her love. Thou art the king, taking possession of the two lands. Kemet Amon, Hatshepsut, great in oblations, pure in food offerings. Thou satisfy my heart at all times. I have given thee all life and satisfaction from me, all stability from me, all health from me, all joy from me. I have given all thee, all lands and all countries, wherein thy heart is glad. I have long intended them for thee and to the ascension, and shall behold them behind the myriads of years of usefulness which I have thought to spend. I have given to thee all punt as far as the lands of the gods of God's land. So they did speak highly of it being in regards to a holy land for them in some regards. And as you have pointed out earlier about the Pygmies, I wanted to point out a passage from UNESCO as well. Thus, in the sixth dynasty, at the very latest, the Egyptians knew of the existence of pygmies. This is confirmed by a 6th dynasty text, which relates that they had already reached Egypt in the time of the pharaoh Isisi, the last king, but one of the 5th dynasty. This pygmy had been found in the land of Punt, which suggests that his homeland must have been very far to the south of Nubia, since Punt must have been somewhere along the coast of Great Lakes, Eritrea, and Somalia. Here, too, the dwarf dancer must have been acquired for the Egyptians by a third party. In each case, the probable presence of pygmies in Egypt implies that there were contacts between the Lower Nile Valley and sub-equatorial Africa.
Can you post that in the Jumbotron? I've been looking for that for a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, some people... So one of the contentions with the land of Punt, it's this thing where some people want for Punt to be like, you know, like Somalia or like the Horn of Africa and like that exclusively. And it's creating confusion because you're really ignoring one of the most characteristic traits of Punt was the pygmies. You know, these pygmy dwarfs. Where, you know, like you just read, you know, they were one of the reasons why they went to Punt. You know, they were looking for these pygmies to, you know, bring back home or, you know, do what they do with them. So, you know, that's these credence to, you know, this region kind of being primarily centered around the Great Lakes region rather than, you know, elsewhere, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, and there is a level of respect for that as a theory, as you know, as things have aligned. We do know that UNESCO even spoke about how the Egyptians thought of the Great Lakes as their place of origin. You know, they're not saying it's their place of their gods. They're outright saying it's their place of origin. So I think. Taking that into context should be at the very least looked into as their homeland for that potential. And matter of fact, I'll actually read that and post that too. The Neolithic periods, there have been continuous settlements by a uniform population. The Egyptians themselves had laid emphasis on this in their oral traditions, mentioning the Great Lakes as their original homeland and Nubia as a country identical with theirs. So yeah, and that's them, UNESCO, speaking on how the Egyptians looked at the Great Lakes as their homeland in origin. For that, post that too.
Right. Good looking. Yeah. So yeah, I think that, you know, there's a lot to, you know, this land of Punt narration. And again, the reason why I think that is because, you know, this land it encompasses people who many people would not associate Africa with. I mean, as far as like civilization and stuff, like the land of Punt, you know, from what we see, from what the evidence I see, was mostly comprised of people who are hunter-gatherers. So, in my opinion, it's showing that the Egyptians had reverence and respect for all humans, even the nomadic people. And they might see those early nomadic populations, the Khoisan, the Pygmies, and whatnot. And they might see them as ancestral and essential to what they eventually formated, you know, with their... you know, sedentary, you know, settlements and whatnot in civilization. So, you know, that's why I think a lot of people get confused. They expect to go to Punt or the region that was Punt. And I think that these people, they'll go there and they expect to, you know, see these civilizations, pyramids or temples mirroring Egypt. And I think that these people don't really understand that, you know, there was a more spiritual reverence for the land, and it was more so geared towards, you know, the culture and structure of the people than, you know, what Western, you know, historians might try to put emphasis on, which is, you know, big buildings and shit like that. So, you know.
Yeah, and Bodie, since you you here, I wanted to touch on what did you think about the pygmies that may have been found in association with Punt as well?
Damn, and I had a good answer to the question. God damn it, what was the question again?
Your stance on the position of the pygmies.
So in relation to Punt. You won't see giraffes in Egypt today, but when they do speak of Punt, one of the first mentions of Punt is from like Pharaoh Sahore or somewhere around that time of Sahore. But there's this little kid, I think it was not Pepe or whatever, but I forget the name of the little kid, but he was Pharaoh. And he did have people go out to, I believe, Punt. Or was it the kingdom of Yam? But it's probably Punt, right? And he was celebrating. He was like, please bring the pygmy back alive, right? Because in ancient Egypt, right, in the old kingdom especially, not so much during the later periods of Egypt, these people were venerated. They did the dances of the god. They were special. They were, almost magical in the eyes of Egyptians. So he, of course, has decided to see this person. So they're rare in Egypt, but I don't think it should be precluded that you didn't have pygmy peoples in the Horn of Africa. It's also possible that maybe Punt was larger than we thought, and perhaps Punt included, people near the Great Lakes or something like that. Like, I'm not really educated on the historical sort of migrations of pygmy peoples. I know they're not just one ethnic group. I know that. But, I'm not really sure. Like, where would you find that demographic of pygmies today that were, taken into ancient Egypt and celebrated?
Only place I find them is around the Great Lakes region. And again, I don't know if you were here earlier, but we spoke about the Khoisan people as well. Did you hear that part, Bodie?
Yeah. So, like, the Stetopagia or whatever that is called. We don't know what the queen. What's her name? I forgot the name of the queen, but the queen of Punt. We don't know if she had that, but I think the images of her are highly suggestive of it. I think all of this sort of changes our assumptions about how, at least genetically, interconnected these regions of Africa might be to other regions of Africa.
Hey, how's it going, man? Peace. I love the conversation. I like that you guys are leading the facts and all that. I think an interesting question would be, if you study other like Great River civilizations, right? If like, say, if you used to look at the Native Americans that were here in America, if you were to see, like, say there was a civilization that flourished in ancient like Louisiana at the mouth of the Mississippi River, if you used to study all the Great River civilizations and see that like throughout the entire river, there's this sort of ancestral cultural relationship, I think that would really be the nail in the coffin. If we say, yo, there's 10 out of 10 river civilizations in the world, all of them seem to be culturally related from the beginning of the river to the end of the river, right? That would really put the nail in the coffin of like this relationship we're talking about between Kemet and Punt and North and South. Because, there's people that argue, Europeans that argue came from Asiatics or mixed some whatever influence. But I think that would put the nail in the coffin. Because if you say, yo, Tigris, Euphrates, man, these people are culturally related from top to bottom. Mississippi, top to bottom. Ganges River, top to bottom. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I've actually brought that up in discussion before with Trey. And even with Bodhi, I believe. You might get a hard time convincing Bodhi on this, but when we're talking about relation to cultural relationships and the kinship that we do find between people that extends farther than just congregating around, things like the Nile or other rivers, for example. I think those things are relative to a civilization and where we potentially have the best, observation of survival. We're surviving based on how we're able to cultivate in and around these freshwater rivers and lakes, for example. But I did want to touch also on even earlier expeditions into Punt that I found in dissertation. I found that the pharaoh of the fifth dynasty, Sahu, Ra, and Usar, had sent a number of missions to Punt. He continued a kinship relations with lands of his ancestors. He sent a commercial and cultural mission to Punt during the first year of his reign. He followed the old traditions as handed down to him from previous dynasties. He also believed that Punt was the land of his origin, similar to some other pharaohs. A pharaoh of the sixth dynasty also regarded Punt as the land of his ancestors. This tradition in relation with Punt was maintained not only by the sea route, but also by the land route by Egypt in the way of through Nubia and Ethiopia. So we do have this belief that not only is it with the gods, with their belief and through the origin of their ancestors being just as important also. But I think we're starting to build a case for peoples who have built a civilization looking through the data and the study that we know of, is that it came through the south and it went its way up north. Are we in agreement to that?
Yeah. From what I know, I'm in agreement to that. From the books I read, I haven't read, you know, everything, but I'm in agreement.
Absolute. Trey, Bodhi?
That's a general pattern, I agree.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
I just wanted to know if we generally agree that the pharaonic or the building of civilization, it came up from the south and up and into the north and what we now call Lower Egypt.
Oh, you mean from Upper Egypt to Lower Egypt?
And even further, further down.
Yeah, from the heart of Africa. Okay,
so I actually read papers, and these are people who study, like, I guess, climate and geography, but also archaeology.
He will bring you back on, too. All right. Go ahead.
Surrounding Egypt, right? And I think that there's a pretty strong theory out there that the people that we call the ancient Egyptians came a very long time ago from the northeast or northwest of Sudan. You know, I apologize. I think it's the northeast, though, of Sudan. That is where they came from. So no doubt. I mean, look at Nubian Group A, right? And Nubian Group C. Like, look at the similarities that they have to the Egyptians. Nubian Group A especially developed that independently, like on their own. And so there's been so many cultural interactions there. In addition to sort of like the evidence that, hey, look, these people had to have been inhabiting the northeast of Sudan before they came into Egypt. So, yeah, no doubt about that.
Yeah, absolute. And I think that's going to be a pretty interesting topic as well, to like really discuss around the pre-dynasty era of Egypt, not even just within Egypt, but the more of, I guess, the heart of Africa around the Great Lakes and making this journey way up the Nile. I think the last, and we have to be pretty honest here, there's not a whole lot of information about Punt. I think one of the last remaining things to talk about also is the bamboo that we have found mummified, and they found that it was only in relation to be the land of Punt. Is that correct?
Yeah, so Ethiopia, Somalia, Eritrea, especially Eritrea and Ethiopia, I read from the genetic study, it would be the very, very northern part of Somalia. But yeah, that is where the monkeys are traced to. And those regions likely were either a part of Punt or were influenced by Punt. So there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, Trey, you had something to add on to that? Baboon.
So the baboon, you know, it is what it is. I mean, no, you know, they found a baboon and they linked it to a species that's almost regular, you know, relegated to the horn. No, I mean, it is what it is. You know, that's just what it is.
Absolutely. And then, so again, people, so punt is one of those things that we really wanted to delve as much as we could into it. Is any like lasting thoughts that remain about punt at this point too?
Well, I mean, I got to reread the study, but this one study, I think the one that Trey's citing, it emphasizes Eritrea and Ethiopia. So now I hear some disappointment in Trey's voice, but you know, you still can, you know, emphasize, hey, look, I mean, punt was in, you know, Eritrea. It was in Ethiopia. You know, I don't know what Somalis were doing in punt. I mean, it's
no, I mean, the thing about it is you find baboons there, but you don't find the pygmies there. You know, in the notion that the pygmies used to live in the horn and migrated, there's no evidence for that. You don't find any pygmy bones. There's no pygmy DNA in modern horns.
Really?
Yeah, you don't find any pygmy bones, or you don't find any of that in the Horn of Africa.
There's not a lot of, you know, for obvious reasons, not a lot of archaeology going on in the Horn of Africa. Right? Not a lot of physical anthropology going on there, right? It's not necessarily the most stable place. But I do get what you're saying. There should be some sort of genetic trace or, like, you know, evidence that, hey, these linguistic, you know, evidence. Hey, this is a group of, you know, Twa people who clearly, you know, are speaking languages that are connected to, like, ancient Egyptian. Maybe there are, actually. I don't know. Maybe there are. It's a topic of research that I don't think people have looked into enough.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't think it's really, because you see in West Africa, there were pygmies there, and you see a distant relationship between modern West Africans and pygmies. But you don't see that among East Africans for the most part, Horn Africans. So, you know, I would hesitate to attribute pygmies to the Horn of Africa anyway. And again, those were defining characteristics of punt, so not baboons. So it's like, you know, I would definitely make the argument that, you know, where the pygmies live at is where you will find punt. Also, another thing you look at, UNESCO mentioned this back when they did the conference in 1974. There were two statues found on the Zambezi of Thutmosis. Nobody talks about this, and they were kind of just like, oh, it's a random type of thing. But if it was one statue, okay, maybe. But it was two statues of Thutmosis found on the Zambezi. I'm going to find that. I meant to look for that before this, but it slipped my mind. But yeah, I'll find that. I posted on Egypt Search a couple of years ago. There was a dude trying to deny that. It's like, it's in UNESCO now. He's freaking going to deny that, you know. But, you know, I posted and he shut up. He never brought it up ever again, you know. But
and UNESCO confirming what?
That there were two statues of Thutmosis on the Zambezi River in the around the Congo. Central Africa. So, you know, and that's interesting because, you know, typically when you find statues of pharaohs, that's typically meaning that there was a reign of some sort from, you know, well, into that land, you know. Mm-hmm. It kind of means that land was kind of under that the yoke of that pharaoh, at least under the control of this civilization. So, you know, we look at the maps of Egypt, you know, how much would it distort Eurocentrism if you were to show the extension of Egyptian boundaries going to the Zambezi River rather than, you know, stopping around, you know, the first cataract or whatnot, you know. So, you know, that's just more, you know, context. You know, Eurocentric people don't really like to acknowledge, but, you know, it's interesting.
And going to that point and topic a little bit, I even read somewhere in UNESCO that book that they may have even found a statue of Osiris that was, I forget where, but it was very southern, maybe even in the Congo part of Africa, I believe. And if that, and I don't know if they actually solidified that as a fact. But they were investigating. I haven't heard anything outside of that going forward. Have you heard that one?
Osiris, I might have heard that one. I do know, you know, we got the you know, like the symbols of Osiris, the crook and the flail, you know, we found that all throughout, you know, statues of Africa and whatnot. So, we found that all throughout regions of Africa and whatnot. But as far as Osiris itself, no, I've never heard
it. Find full episodes of the podcast featuring Straight Facts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Also, check out our Instagram for more Marok Oris content, including the shop and our subscription service for exclusives. Peace, Mer. I'm Monroe.